Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. Joining us, as always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm at AHMalcolm on Twitter. And of course, over at RedState.com, he's got great columns once again that we're going to discuss today. I think this is our last opportunity to wish each other a happy 250th birthday.
Yes.
Before each of us individually actually gets to 250.
Isn't that something? 200. I remember the bicentennial. It's when they painted the fire plugs red, white, and blue.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I remember it as well. Now, I was a teenager at the time.
Shut up.
I know. I had to throw that one in there. Which is to say that, you know, my recollections may not be entirely, perfect on this. But I kind of remember that people were talking about the commercialism of and that sort of thing. But there was a lot of it, right? There was a lot of recognition. You talk about the fire plugs being painted red, white, and blue. I do recall that. And it just seemed that there was a lot more public commitment to the bicentennial than there is to. And I'm going to break out this fancy word, the semi-quincentennial. Which is what this.
This is Ed throwing around his vocab. Yeah.
Semi-quincentennial. I'm going to say that because I bought that word for $50, and I'm going to say it as often as I need to. That's apparently what it's called.
Don't you like it when Ed uses big words? You just love it, don't you?
What is up with Ed Morrissey using these big words? I don't understand this at all. Oh, wait, I'm talking about myself. But it just seems to me that the country, even if it was overly commercialized, even if it was cheesy, which it was at times, very cheesy, you know, all the swag, all the merchandise, all of the red, white, and blue t-shirts and, you know, visors and ball caps and stuff like that. I don't see any of that these days. I mean, I really don't see anybody buying into this. And I know that this is one of the things that you're writing about this week.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking, well, it'll come, but I don't think it is. I don't think it's coming at all.
Well, I live in the South, so there's probably more of it than you living in the South. Yeah.
Well, I live in Texas, which is technically the South, but I mean, Texas is Texas, you know, there's always right. American flags around here.
Well, there's a lot of my little town. It's like a crossroads town, a little tiny place. They put up like 100 flags in the park in a very neat box. And there's flags on the flagpoles, as there are every July 4th. And Memorial Day. I don't know. I've seen a lot of flag sales, specials on American-made flags. But, you know, I it's Trump is what it is. It's TDS that 10 states have decided to opt out of the celebration of America. 9 of them are blue states. One is Vermont, which is in New England. So that kind of rules it out as strange.
Well, I mean, Vermont was not one of the original colonies, but it was split off from one of the original colonies. But Massachusetts and Pennsylvania are not going to. But I take that back. Pennsylvania.
Isn't that amazing?
Pennsylvania is going to have an unofficial presence there. I think 2 state senators are going to set up a booth or something like that. Selena Zito's been covering that.
Wow. Boy, that'll help.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least somebody showed up. But I mean, Massachusetts isn't going to be there. Pennsylvania's not going to be there. I mean, if you don't like Trump, I get that. And I think Trump didn't help by trying to turn the America 250 into a Trump rally when the entertainment started to disappear from the event. I don't think that was helpful. I think he should have just let that be. But honestly, this is way more than just Trump. This is, you know, a major anniversary of our country's independence. And even if you don't necessarily like the direction of policy at this particular point in time, the fact that we're an independent nation and we've survived 250 years as a republic, and we're still a republic, which is, you know, the historical analogs aren't really good on this, I think is way worth celebrating. I'm very happy to be celebrating that. But
it's too bad.
I think you're right. I think it's TDS to a certain extent, but I think it's more than that. And I think it really is in the 50 years between the bicentennial, which I will remind everyone I was a teenager.
Give me a break.
I'm glad we got that on camera. and today, we have 50 years of an education system that has been denigrating the American experiment and denigrating ordered liberty, and teaching everybody that America is an oppressor, occupier nation, when the opposite is true. We've done more to liberate people in our 250 years than anybody else has done since the beginning of time. Except Moses.
To no national gain.
Right. We, you know, that was the famous, you know, the only land that we seek is the land to bury our fallen men and women in the pursuit of liberation, right? And that to me is a mortal sin. Well, it's a sin, and it's probably going to be a fatal sin if we don't correct that. And I think this is an opportunity to take a look around and just say, Trump aside, if Trump wasn't president right now, if Kamala Harris was president, do you think that Andrew's already groaning? I'm sorry. The trauma here is tremendous. But if Kamala Harris was president, do you really think that the attitude would be different? Because I don't.
Yeah.
I think, in fact, that might be worse if Kamala Harris was president.
That I don't know, but I yield to your wisdom on it since you were a teenager at the bicentennial. so you would remember this. I, on the other hand, was a mere adult. I don't know about Kamala. Maybe it's because of where I live is a big deal. And I'm not traveling anywhere near as much as I used to. So I'm not exposed to the places that are like yawn, another national birthday. But there are concerns. It seems to me that the whole Islamization is one now. It doesn't seem to be one of, adapting and becoming American. They want to become something else. And at the moment, it seems to be on the rise. I mentioned that in the column yesterday. But and you're right. It is sad if that's happening. It ought to be something that we could all agree on. Is that it's been messy, but good. And it's trending up.
Yeah, I just feel like there's been something lost. And to me, I go back to formation, right? Maybe it's just something I'm more focused on. But I just don't think we're forming people to be. I mean, I don't think you have to be jingoistic about this, right? I think you could be realistic. You can discuss the various things that we've done over the years that we got wrong, you know, slavery for the first 80 something years. And then, you know, Jim Crow for close to a century after that. You can discuss those things, but you don't measure a country by only its flaws and only its failures. And especially one as successful as this country has been, that could turn itself into basically the dynamo of small R Republican defense around the globe. And yeah, certainly in World War II, we played that role. And during the Cold War, we played that role.
You're absolutely right. And you should, we should ask ourselves, what are the forces that are seeking to deny the essential goodness of the place and the essential positivity of the history? And those forces are not seeking to make it better. They're seeking to destroy it and build up something more communal. And we've gone through those stages in the past, I guess.
Communal or communist? Communal or communist?
Yeah. Yeah, communist. Yeah. Socialist. I mean, socialist is the Democrat socialist is what they claim. It's the, what's the word? They've taken an alcohol swab to the word communist to make it Democrat socialist, which has been okay with Bernie, who's benefited greatly from capitalism.
Yeah, you noticed that too, right?
Yeah. He's got one home for every presidential campaign.
Yeah. Fight the oligarchs, as brought to you by George Soros, Neville Roy Singham, you know. Yeah. All of these various, you know, billionaires on the left. There's billionaires on the left and the right in this country. The difference is that we're not trying to pillory billionaires just for being billionaires, or the 1 trillionaire is on our side, at least for the moment. So I'm okay with that. But yeah, I mean, certainly there's a lot of hypocrisy in socialism, and that's very clear. But again, this gets back to how we form people. You know, yeah. Bernie Sanders is an old socialist crank. He's always been an old socialist crank. I used to work with a guy who was almost sounds exactly like him. I think they were both from Vermont, now that I think about it, where he kept talking about how great the Soviet Union was, right up until the time the Berlin Wall fell. And we all said, hey, Lowell.
Yeah.
Hey, well, they weren't practicing true socialism. That's the reason why that didn't work. They weren't practicing true socialism.
They didn't get it right. If we try it one more time.
Yeah. But I mean, I'll give it up for the old cranks. You know, the problem is that we are producing nothing. But I don't want to say nothing. Obviously, some young people come out with their head on their shoulders and understand, you know, able to think. But more and more, we're not teaching kids to think critically. We're teaching kids ideology and indoctrinating them in this hard left. And this is where you get the DEI and all the rest of this stuff. But basically, this is the hard left socialist ideology that is always seeking to claim that they can perfect humanity by simply seizing all the means of production and having the Politburo assign all of the benefits as they see fit. Because that's how it happens. That's what ends up happening in these
It's structures. Your turn to starve.
Yeah. Right. And look, I mean, capitalism isn't perfect. It is, however, the most successful system for raising the standard of living for entire societies that we've ever devised. And if you want evidence of that, and this is another column that you've written, right? And we'll blend the two of them together.
Yeah.
Just take a look at how Europeans coming to the United States for the first time for World Cup are reacting to things like Buc-ee's, right? And Texas barbecue. I think one of them went to Terry Black's. It was a British family went to Terry Black's. And they were just amazed at how the food that you got and
the abundance. Yeah. Yeah, it's just the abundance and the free refills.
Free refills, free chips. Yeah. You know, to start meals, free chips.
I didn't order the bread. That's okay. It's free.
Yeah. And we're kind of used to that, right? I mean, that's the
environment. It for granted. And what you take for granted seems free. But that's why I think the World Cup, I'm not really following it, but That's why I think it's a blessing, because it's a reminder, maybe an oblique reminder, of the good we have, the good we've built, the good the people before us have built and the people before them, and the bad that they've expunged. And it's always messy, but we're doing good. We're doing good. And we have, when I went to travel to Europe many years ago, Americans were famous for excess, you know, excess wealth and clothing and spending, and loud people. So it's really a refreshing moment to see people walking into the well, I guess they're called pitches now, walking into the stadium for a soccer match, and going, oh my God, and it's air conditioned.
Well, I mean, air conditioning is a big issue right now anyway, because most of Europe doesn't allow for air conditioning. There's this, I just read this today, is that they're having to install air conditionings in the morgues because people are dying in significant numbers now from this heat wave that they're having. They won't install air conditioning in buildings to keep people protected when they're alive, but they'll install them in the morgues after they've died of heat exhaustion, which is, you know, kind of, well, that's the socialist mindset, right? That's part of what the socialist mindset is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope they lose, but, and I hope I'm not around if they win.
I've been thinking about that myself. It's like, yeah, I don't have that much time left. You know, like...
Did you see Mel Brooks 100 and Clint Eastwood 99? God bless them.
Dick Van Dyke 100, right? So maybe, yeah. I have a few more years to deal with the socialists if they ever actually do seize power, and seizing would be what they would do with it. But I mean, this to me is part of sort of like this grievance. This is being driven by grievance and envy, right? This is class warfare. You know, the socialists are not even being clever about it any longer. You got James Tallarico here, and I take that back. James Tallarico tried to be clever about this, right? He didn't want to use haves and have nots, because that's pretty, you know, trite and cliched these days. Yeah. Instead, he called them tops and bottoms.
as in clothing at Navy, Old Navy.
Well, that's one interpretation, sure, but that's not the only interpretation, because tops and bottoms has a whole other connotation when it comes to the LGBTQ range of issues and
relationships. Yes,
and I'm just very curious to see how successful James Tallarico is in convincing Texans that they're bottoms.
Well, speaking of polls, but the New York Times had a poll out today saying that the guy in Maine, Plattner, has a slight lead in at the moment. Of course, it's early, but
it's early. It's interesting because I wrote about that this morning to, you know, literally dozens of people read that. I think when you mentioned polls, you know, eyes roll to the back of the head, and I get it. Polls are not sexy. I get it. We've decided polls are not sexy any longer. But I did write about this, and it was interesting because
you're on today.
You know, I've been looking forward to this, man. It's interesting to me because what it showed, I think, is that Plattner's actually relatively weak. First off, Susan Collins has always outperformed the polls. I mean, 6 years ago, they were talking that she was on the cusp and she was on the brink of losing her seat, and she ended up winning by 9 points. For some reason, pollsters just don't get Maine correct. But the other thing about this is that, and this I get, that the electorate in Maine is mostly looking at this race in the prism of who controls the Senate. So not really looking at the candidates, at least not yet. And that may be the reason why Plattner is still sustaining at least a fairly significant level of support. They also may not be paying that much attention. This is one of the things I think that comes up an awful lot, is that if you're going to drop oppo research against somebody, you really want to do it after Labor Day. It's like, you know, you're not going to necessarily catch the people who are lightly connected to the electoral process. All the people who are, you know, really into it know all this stuff, but that's not most of the electorate in any state. It's good to get stuff out there. It's good to be talking about this guy, but it may not be effective until down the road. And that's what Democrats are worried about. The poll, this is the Siena poll that you're talking about, showed that, I forget what it was, something like 58 or 59% of Maine voters want Democrats to control the Senate. And yet he's at 49. He's 10 points behind that metric. And the reason why is I think people have started to hear some of this stuff about Plattner, and they're kind of concerned about him specifically. And I think that's only going to get worse as more shoes drop with Plattner. But I mean, just the fact that we're here with Plattner is part of what we're talking about, right? Plattner is, you know, America's terrible. You know, he got the Nazi tattoo. And he claims he didn't know what it was at the time, but people that he spoke with years ago said, oh yeah, I keep it just to remind me that America is a terrible place. And it's like, you got this other woman, Daria Leiser Chevalier, who's a flat out communist, and she's going to be she's going to be in Congress, and she's written about how she wants to overthrow the United States, and she's going to be in Congress.
And her job resume is activists.
Well, I mean, at least she has a job resume. I mean, Plattner is living in his dad's house, and his job earns him $5,000 a year supplying oysters to his mother's restaurant. This is a guy who's been mooching off his parents ever since he got out of the military. For the last 10 years, he's been mooching off his parents. And by the way, off of, you know, he does get a disability pension from the military. But he doesn't have any, there's nothing there. He doesn't have a track record.
There's no there. Yeah.
Yeah. He's entirely a creation of Democratic Socialists, the two activists from the DSA that created this persona that allowed him to win.
The difference, it seems to me that, and this goes back to your education thing, which is crucial. The difference is that in the past, there have been stupid people. But they didn't win. And the people who voted may not have been greatly intelligent, but they were smart enough to see through it. Now, people saw through Kamala Harris, so I'll give them that. But to elect this woman in New York, like you say, she's an outright communist. So this is part of the Bronx and Upper Manhattan. The city has changed. It now has 1 million foreign-born Muslims living there, and that helps explain how Mamdani got elected mayor. These people are unhappy, and they don't really like the United States, which causes me to say, well, then why did you come?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean,
shoot.
I agree.
This is what my great grand, I don't know what it is. It's the wife of my great uncle. Anyway, she would go, shoo, shoo, like brushing a fly away on the podium.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. just to remind people, I mean, do you remember when, you know, this is again around about the same time, not quite the same time, but overlapped with the bicentennial. You remember the America Love It or Leave It stickers?
Yeah.
When all the protests were going on about the war and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, I would like to see more of those stickers. I don't put bumper stickers in my car for anything, but
bring it back.
I might tape that one up to my window at least. I just don't like putting bumper stickers.
You know, you're talking about Oppo research. It occurred to me, I agree with you totally. The best time is after Labor Day because people are enjoying the summer as they should. But Obama had a lot of money in 2012. He was having double fundraisers in Las Vegas. Remember that came the day after Benghazi? Boy, that burns my butt.
Yeah.
He went AWOL for 16 hours. Anyway, he had a lot of money, so he could spend it on portraying Romney as a rich guy, which he was, but a rich guy out of touch, which he wasn't. Remember Romney in the first debate just destroyed Obama. In my mind. So Romney didn't have the money, so he had to wait to get his federal money, and he was already caricatured as a rich guy out of touch with the world. So in that sense, I guess that's not really Oppo research, that's Oppo smearing. But it's a shame and it's discouraging. It really is. All I can do in my own mind is rely on, which may not be valid anymore, but the innate strength of the country that has gone through lots of messy things in the past. Including assassinations and what have you. So
yeah, we've had four of them in the last couple of years, four assassination attempts in the last couple of years. And then one that succeeded against Charlie Kirk.
And
which we should include in this, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And
I don't want to portray things badly, but if you can imagine if there was one, or if one of those had been successful, what would have happened to this country? That may be the goal, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I'm afraid of that too. This is the thing. I mean, I'm not sure that we've been at this kind of a pitch since at least the Vietnam War. And it was pretty bad during the Vietnam War. Although I was a teenager when all of this was going on.
That's right. You were a kid. I'm surprised you could remember that. But they had bombed. The guy that helped Obama write his father book was in trouble for putting a bomb by the Pentagon. So
Bill Ayers and Bernadette Dorn, right?
Bill Ayers. There's a name from the past. Now I have to go get some Listerine.
He was at the Obama's presidential library opening. Both of them were there.
Yeah, I'll bet he was.
He was there. He was responsible for it. He was the guy that made
it everywhere.
Well, he was kind of like the DSA guys, or it was a couple actually. Like the guys that stood Plattner up. Now Obama, I don't want to compare Plattner with Obama in that sense because Obama was actually he was an attorney. He had a career. He had some talent.
He was an activist.
He said the same thing. I'm a community organizer. That was his big claim to fame. And he was apparently very good at it based on the way he.
A community organizer with 41 outstanding tickets unpaid.
Well, that's Chicago, isn't it? If you don't have a dozen unpaid tickets, are you really a Chicagoan? I mean, come on.
Are you really Chicago?
Isn't it odd how Chicagoans just don't pay their tickets?
I had a friend of mine from prep school who is a liberal, and he was for a while he was on the city council in Chicago. He was a real thorn in the side of the Daily Machine. And his clients' cars would constantly get ticketed and towed whenever they parked in front of his office. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that the machine did, that the machine took care of. he was a strange guy. He said, this is back when jogging began. to be an what do you call it, exercise thing. And he said, he said, oh, you know, jogging, but it's so boring, Andy. He said, you can't knock anybody down.
Spoken like a true Chicagoan. But I mean, there was at least something to work with Obama, right? This is a guy who again, he was an attorney. He was a community organizer. He had a track record. He was an adult, first off. First and foremost, Obama was an adult. He was paying his own bills. You know, he got married. He was taking care of his family. Plattner hasn't done any of that. He's done nothing. They've spun this guy out of pure BS.
Yeah. And on the other hand, Obama was, this has always graveled me too, is that he got elected. Americans, now he didn't have much of a record. He got elected. Americans placed their trust in him as their first black president. And he got elected without much of a record. And what was one of the first things he did was to go on a global apology tour, apologizing for the country that had just elected him. Now, that to me, it's right up there with Benghazi in terms of unforgivable.
I completely agree. I completely agree. And that is Plattner. Plattner is that on steroids. Excuse me. Plattner is that on steroids. This is a guy who's done nothing with his life. Who's got allegations of domestic violence by somebody who I know. Okay. Really? So I'm a little biased in this. There's apparently going to be another person coming forward. That's the rumor amongst the rumorists is that there's another one that's going to come forward fairly soon. Has never done anything with his life, has posted incredibly odd things and rude things, including suggesting that women are responsible for their own rapes. And he's getting 52% of women.
How does this happen? This is back to your education thing.
Right.
Yes. People aren't taught to think. You go to college. I went to college, was taught to think. One of my journalism professors, with critical writing, we were taught to be critical and write, not criticism critical, but to be thinking about all things. So we were assigned to write a review of something. I wrote a review of a play. Okay. And then unbeknownst to us, we turned it in, we got graded. And then the next assignment was, now write a review that's the exact opposite of what you said. And that taught me a lot about critical thinking. Just the reverse. It's like a striptease where the person comes out naked and gets dressed. It's completely different. But it makes you think about things that you weren't thinking about with the original assignment. And you're so right about the critical thinking. We just don't have people who say, well, wait a minute. Isn't he the guy that hasn't had a job? Didn't he say this? Now he doesn't want us to remember it. That's the disappointing thing, because it's an internal rot. It's not something superficial that could be fixed with ads.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Remember Richard Pryor used to do a comedy skit about having been filming in prison, or I guess he was in prison, wasn't he? Maybe for drugs or something. And he said, so we were talking with one guy, this big guy was in prison for murder. And I said to him, Buster, why did you kill all those people? And he said, because they was there.
Yeah.
And then Richard Pryor said, thank God for penitentiaries.
Exactly. We've lost that too, by the way. We might be getting that part back finally because of all the nonsense around crime. But I mean, this is part of the same thing. You get these same people who are coming up, and these people are just saying, no, Darrell Eliezer Chevalier was like, no, you got to get rid of all the police. Got to get rid of all of it. Got to get rid of incarceration. Got to get rid of the police. It's like Brandon Johnson in Chicago saying the same thing. Yeah. You know, that law enforcement and incarceration are the cancers, and he's going to cure those cancers.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Actually, most people would think that the crime was the cancer, and that law enforcement is at least a treatment for that. But you do you, pal. That's socialism for you. All right. Well, you brought up Richard Pryor, and I'm going to use that to segue into the jokes of the week. I don't know if you've got one this week.
I'll get it. You go ahead with yours.
I'll do mine here. Jack decided to go skiing with his buddy Bob, so they loaded up Jack's minivan and headed north. Now, after driving for a few hours, they got caught up in this terrible blizzard, and they had to pull off. And the only place around them was this nearby farm out in the middle of nowhere. And they go up to the door, and this very attractive older lady answers the door. And Jack says, look, I know that the weather's terrible and, you know, and that you don't know us at all, but we're stuck. We can't go any farther, and we got to wait for this weather to pass. Can we just sleep in your barn? You know, we don't want to intrude on you. Can we just sleep in the barn? If the weather breaks, we'll be gone before you even wake up. Lady agrees, and two men go out to the barn and settle in for the night. Morning comes, the weather's clear, and they go on their way. They go skiing, have a great time. But about 9 months later, Jack gets an unexpected letter from an attorney. It took him a few minutes to figure out this letter, but he finally figured out it was the attorney of the attractive widow that had given him shelter. And so he goes over to his friend Bob and says, Bob, do you remember that good-looking widow from the farm that we stayed at in her ski holiday? And Bob says, yeah, I do. And Jack says, Bob, did you get up in the middle of the night, go to the house and pay her a visit? Yeah, Bob says, you know, I have to admit that I did that. And Jack says, did you use my name instead of your name when you did that? And Bob's face turns beet red and he says, yeah, look, I'm sorry, buddy. I'm afraid I did. Why did you ask? And Jack says, well, I just got a call from her attorney. She just passed away and left me everything.
Oh, I did not see that coming.
Thanks, Bob. Oh,
hey.
Thanks, Hey-o. Bob. Hey-o. Hey-o. All right, what do you got?
I got, let's see. These are old, as always. Seth Meyers, he says, according to a new study, half of married people wish that they had been able to relax and enjoy their wedding day. The other half are called grooms. And one other one, this is Jay Leno. He says, the Obama campaign spent more than it raised in May, spent more than he took in. That's called being a Democrat, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, Edward, happy birthday, America, and you and Marcia and the state of Texas.
Well, I got one more for you from the state of Texas. You'll enjoy this one.
Okay.
With that in mind, here's one more. His doctor, Bill goes to his doctor, and he's got all sorts of different health issues and tells him, you need to get to a warm, dry weather state. So he moves to Texas. And after settling in, you know, he's there for a few weeks and he meets his neighbor, who's an older guy. And he asks the neighbor, is this really a healthy place? The man says, yeah, it sure is. He says, well, how so? How does this improve your health? He says, and the neighbor says, well, look, when I first arrived here, I couldn't say a word. I had hardly any hair on my head. I didn't have the strength to walk across the room and I had to be lifted out of bed. And Bill says, wow, that's wonderful. How long have you been here? Well, I was born here.
Okay. Couldn't walk or anything.
Couldn't walk, couldn't say a word, had to be lifted out of bed. All right. On that note, happy 250th to you as an American, not to you personally or to me personally, but to us as Americans. And
that's
to
right, because you were only 50 at the time.
I was a teenager at the bicentennial. I just want to remind everybody of that.
Thanks,
all right.
Jay. I'd almost forgotten. Happy birthday, you guys, everybody. Thank you.
Have a great 4th of July Independence Day celebration, and we'll be back for more after this. After everybody's turned 250, we'll be back for more.
That's right, for the 251st year.
Hey, there you go.